Blog Talk Radio.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
March 3rd, 2013, and we're broadcasting live from Seattle, Washington. I'm your host, Christina De Jesus, and I'm joined by my co-host and brother in martial arts, Sifu Robert Deal. What's going on today, Sifu Bob?
You know, not a whole lot. It was a gorgeous day, about 70 here in Southern California for all you poor bastards that are freezing your butts off right now.
Oh, geez, yeah.
I do this just for you and my buddy, my best friend in Chicago, Greg Wolbert.
It was a little sunny today, and then it got cloudy, and then it got sunny, and then it got cloudy. So that's telling
me. Well, that's the nice thing about being in Seattle. If you don't like the weather, wait 5 minutes, it's going to change.
That's right.
Listen, it was funny. Yesterday morning, my son's group, the Ventures, which is part of Boy Scouts, they were having a fundraising breakfast. They called it, it was a cat and a hat theme, they called it green eggs and ham. So if somebody wanted green eggs, they'd put a little food coloring in it, which they don't know if they just leave the eggs sit long enough in the warmer, they're going to turn green all by themselves. So there were these two girls that went outside, very attractive girls, college girls. One was in really short shorts and one was in a short skirt.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked the guy taking them on, I said, where'd the girls go? And he said, well, they're outside drumming up business without a sign. And you know me, Sifu. I'm Mr. Tact, right? Okay. I'm Mr.
Tact. You're right.
I'm Mr. Tactless. So when I heard that they went outside to drum up business, these words just popped out of my mouth going, you know, there are some police officers here in town that may not find that too funny. And it was too late to stop myself.
Oh, no.
But, you know, I'm really excited about our last show of the month. We're having an all-women show. This is where I must have to shut up during that show because it's got to be PC, very tactful.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's just not me. I don't even know if I should even call in that day.
You'll be okay.
Oh, well, you may have to put me in my place every now and then, and you're so good at that.
You'll be okay. Just open the envelope. It's got a little that I'll be sending you. It's got a little pill in it. Take it just before showtime. You'll be okay.
Oh, great. He's going to send me tranquilizers.
Oh, boy. Well, we have a really great show in store for all our listeners out there. And before we even get started with our shout-outs and our news and health news and Bob's weird news, I'd like to bring on our special guest. So our special guest tonight is Professor Patrick McDaniel. And Professor McDaniel has been studying Kajikembo Karate since 1973. And he was promoted to black belt in 1977. He was promoted to certified instructor in 1988, endorsed by the Kajikembo founder himself, Sijo Adriano Imperado, and received master's certification in 2002 under Master Richard Peralta. In 2004, he developed his method, The Noble Way. And Professor McDaniel is recognized by the World Black Belt Council and is slated to be inducted into the United States Martial Arts Hall of Fame as of this year, 2013. So it is me and Sifu Robert's honor and pleasure to welcome Kajikembo master and founder of the Kido Kai Kempo system, Professor Patrick McDaniel. Welcome, Professor. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Hey there. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you guys for having me so much.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. And because we brought you at the beginning of the show, we would like you to join us to be a kind of a guest co-host for the first segment of our show. All of our shows have shout-outs, special announcements, health news, and Bob's special segment, the Bob's Weird News. And we'd like you to join us for that. So, yay, out of sight. All right, so listeners, our phone number here is 347-677-0699. Please feel free to call in if you have any questions or want to comment on the shout-outs or the news. And we also have our chat board up on the live marquee on blogtalkradio.com. So all you have to do is scroll down from the main show play thing. I don't know what it's called. You just have to scroll down a little bit and you'll see a flash chat board. And if I remember correctly, you're automatically logged in when you come onto the show. So go ahead and type all your questions right in there. All right. So let's go ahead and get to our announcements and shout-outs. Why don't we go ahead and start with your shout-outs and announcements, Sifu Bob?
Oh, very cool. Well, my first shout-out is to the Masters Hall of Fame. We had a great conference call, a bunch of the ambassadors. You were on it. Lisa King, Jamie Cashin, Dan Heck, the CEO of the Masters. We've got one more week until the closing of the inductions for this year. It's of course, the event's going to be held in Costa Mesa, California on June 22nd this year. And we invite everybody, join their Facebook page, follow them on Twitter, follow them on LinkedIn. You can go to their website if you want to buy tickets for the dinner and meet some great masters and have fun doing it. Their website is www.mastershalloffame.org.
Right on.
Now, my next shout out is, I've announced this a couple times, to Masters in Motion. They're having a free apps. I will repeat that because it bears repeating.
Free.
They are having a free women's self-defense class on March 9th. So that's 1 week away from yesterday. They're having it from 1 to 3 at the Burbank studio, 1515 North Glen Oaks Boulevard, Burbank, California, 91504. This is for young women, old women that are maybe subject to elder abuse, young women starting to date, women in the workforce. It should be a good time, and I may just drop in and pay my respects to Sensei Chris Kedeman. Look, or Kadamian. Look him up on Facebook. You can buy you can get tickets online. Now it says buy, you know, I looked at that, it says buy tickets, but it's a free seminar advertised all over the place. It's free. So I invite everybody to come down and join them if you're in the Burbank, LA area. And that's
right
it
on.
For my shout out.
Right on. Yay. And Yay. Professor McDaniel, do you have any announcements or shout outs that you'd like to do?
Well, right now we don't have a scheduled date for Illinois. I just did a seminar in West Texas 2 weeks ago where I've got instructors that are teaching in the Texas area, in East Texas and West Texas, and I'm scheduled to do a seminar in Illinois coming up, but we don't quite have a date yet, but I just need people to kind of watch out for that and prepare for that and
okay.
keep looking at us on Facebook and on the webpage. But when those dates are gonna come up for Illinois. But I like working with everybody. So anybody who is interested in coming to those Keto Kai Kondra Kimbo Noble System seminars, they are completely out of sight. I love working with everybody and anybody. And when those dates come up, we will post them on Facebook and on the webpage. So just stay tuned for those.
Awesome. Now, does the
Very
Keto
cool.
Kai have does the Keto Kai have a Facebook page also, Professor?
It does. It's KetoKaiKimbo.com.
Oh, okay. Cool, because I need to go look that up. I tried to send you a friend request, and I realized that you've got, like, over 5,000 friends and can't take any more friend requests.
Sounds
like us.
I know, it sounds like us. Me and Sifu Bob can't take any more friends either, so I had to set up a second Facebook page.
Right.
It's crazy,
yeah.
Isn't it? Awesome.
Yeah, well, I'm working on that because I would love to have you guys as friends. This is a beautiful introduction, and I would like to continue with you guys. I think you're out of sight.
Awesome. So, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
I'm working on something so that we can be friends.
Awesome. Well, I think getting started on being able to contact each other on the Masters Hall of Fame Facebook page is a great start. So that was really cool. All right. Well, I'll go ahead and do a couple shout-outs. My first shout-out goes to Master Roland Osborne. He's got a magazine article on Up magazine. And he did an interview on Up magazine about a great martial arts school curriculum innovation that he's developed. I won't go too much into it, but the link and all the information is on our Dynamic Dojo Facebook group page. It's got like the full transcript of the interview, so that's why I didn't want to go too far into it, because it's got the full transcript of the interview in there. And it's also got great information about his Hyper Pro training program for kids. So go check it out. If you teach kids martial arts, check out the link on our Dynamic Dojo Facebook page. All right. And my second shout out wants to go to good old Mike Schwartz. And he's hosting the Gateway to the West Martial Arts Seminar. And this seminar benefits the Wounded Warrior Project. And the instructors that are included in the seminar are Guru Schwartz himself, and he'll be teaching Sarada Eskrima. And there'll also be Sifu Kim Hui, I hope I said his name correctly. And he'll be teaching Sun Tai Chi and Qigong. And good old Wes Bennett, who'll be teaching Lukai Kali, Jeet Kune Do, and Hartzell Kali. And Guru Wes was one of our previous guests on a previous episode. So this benefits the Wounded Warrior Project, which purpose is to raise awareness and enlist the public's aid for the needs of our injured service members, and to help injured service members and assist each other, and to provide unique direct programs and services to meet their needs. Now, if you can't attend this seminar, and all the information is on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page, go check it out. Now, if you can't attend, but you would like to donate to this wonderful cause, just go to woundedwarriorproject.org and make a donation. It's a wonderful cause, and it'll help our wounded servicemen and women that have worked so hard for our country. So go check out the seminar if you can. Check out that link and check out woundedwarriorproject.org. All right. And my third shout out wants to go to Jay Blanton. Now, Master Jay Blanton just put out a new Facebook page, and it's called Spirit of the Tiger, Let's Stop Bullying. And that link has also been posted on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook group page by Master Blanton himself. So when you get to the Dynamic Dojo page, you just got to scroll down a little bit to get past the announcements of our current show, and you'll see all those great links. So, yay, that's it for my shout-outs.
Wow, great shout-outs.
I know. Now, if anyone listening has any shout-outs, they want to say hi to someone on the air, if you've got any special events, give us a call, 347-677-0699. We've got our chat board up also, or you can type in your events right in there. All right. Well, let's go ahead and segue over to our health news. Yay, health news. Now, rather than me actually talking for this health news, I was actually going to talk about this particular bit of health news, but I actually have an audio clip about this particular subject that I wanted to feature today. And the subject I want to feature today is how the Mediterranean diet can cut the risk of heart disease and heart attacks and stroke. So, Sifu Bob, you've heard of the Mediterranean diet, haven't you?
No, I really haven't. I want you to explain that to me.
Sure. Well, it's pretty much a diet that's really rich in olive oil, beans, nuts, fish, fruits, and vegetables. So a lot of the foods that are indigenous to the Mediterranean countries, I don't know what I'm saying, Mediterranean countries, and even wine. So apparently wine, in moderation, of course, is included with this diet. And not too long ago, in fact, February 25th, a study was released in the New England Journal of Medicine And the findings have found that about 30% of heart attacks, strokes, and deaths from heart disease can be prevented in people who are of high risk of those conditions if they switch to a Mediterranean diet.
That's right.
So, yeah. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to play a short NPR news clip that originally aired on February 25th from the show All Things Considered. And here it is.
We end this hour in Spain, which may be suffering economically, but it's doing something right at the dinner table. A study published today in the New England Journal of Medicine provides new evidence about the Mediterranean diet. Rich in olive oil, nuts, and yes, even wine, the diet was found to dramatically reduce the risk of heart attack and stroke. Lauren Freyer tells us more from Spain.
Jose Luis Garcia has a close-up daily look at the Mediterranean diet. He's a waiter at a tapas bar here in Madrid, where he's used to drizzling olive oil over dishes day and night.
El 80%
of my customers eat a loaf of bread with olive oil, almost everyone, every morning, he says. Good olive oil, none of this sunflower oil or other stuff. His father died of a heart attack, which puts Garcia in a high-risk category. He says he's not giving up his olive oil, though, and a new study says he shouldn't. Findings published today in the New England Journal of Medicine show a Mediterranean diet rich in olive oil and nuts could prevent 30% of heart attacks, strokes, and deaths in people with a high risk of heart disease.
This study is a randomized controlled clinical trial, which is the gold standard of research design. It's a very strong study.
Rachel Johnson is a professor of nutrition at the University of Vermont and a spokeswoman for the American Heart Association. She says the study looked at about 7,500 Spaniards who are overweight, smokers, or suffer from diabetes, all high-risk factors.
People that are high risk of cardiovascular disease, when they were provided with either extra virgin olive oil or nuts, it actually lowered their risk of disease. The outcome they measured was heart attacks, strokes, and deaths.
The results were so conclusive that scientists called off the study early to report their findings. Johnson says this could change the way nutritionists advise high-risk patients.
We have moved beyond the very low-fat diet message, and we know that adding healthy fats, in this case in the form of the extra virgin olive oil or the nuts, can have a beneficial effect. So the take-home message is include healthy fats in your diet.
Back at his tapas bar in Madrid, waiter Jose Luis Garcia delivers a heaping plate of those healthy fats, calamari fried in olive oil, to one of his regulars. 65-year-old Maria Luisa Romero.
Feels healthy because we cook with oil, a lot of fish, a lot of vegetables. It's very healthy.
For NPR News, I'm Lauren Freyer in Madrid.
Our program is directed by Monica Estatieva, edited by Allison McAdam and Franklin Cater, and produced by Matt Martinez. The technical director is Stu Rushfield. We had engineering support from Neil Tivault. The staff includes Gabe O'Connor, Carol Klinger, Viet Le, Jennifer Longmire-Wright, Brendan Banizak, Bilal Qureshi, and Evie Stone. Our executive producer is Christopher Turpin. I'm Audie Cornish, and you're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.
I love All Things Considered. I love that show.
That's really funny to see, Foo. A guy working in a topless bar that likes wine. Who knew?
That's right. Oh, my goodness. Oh, that came late. What's going on with my rim shot being really late? But, you know, the thing I like diet is that all of the foods that are very prevalent in the Mediterranean countries are very delicious. It's not like, you know, it's not like you have to really watch yourself. I mean, yeah, I mean, you have to watch what you eat. I mean, you can't eat like huge portions and stuff like that. But olive oil, I mean, I love olive oil on my bread. Nuts, beans, grains, fish, fruits, you know, like figs and stuff like that, vegetables, and hey, wine. I mean, can't go wrong with that diet. You know, it's a far cry from, you know, hydrogenated vegetable oil and corn syrup and a lot of the junk that kids are eating these days. So, yay.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, I think it's time for Bob's
Weird
News.
Yes, and I do want to start out with a shout-out I forgot. Because we're working on getting a commercial put together. I want to do a shout-out to the Martial Arts History Museum located here in Burbank. You've been there. They've got some great artifacts. The curator is Sifu Michael Masuda, which is a monkey kung fu practitioner. And they're at 2319 West Magnolia Boulevard in Burbank, 91506. And their number is 818-478-1722. If you're in the area, I do suggest visiting the museum. It's a donation of $6 to tour the museum. It's small, but they've got some great artifacts from the Filipino martial arts, Japanese, Korean. They have a dress in a locked case that was one of Cynthia Rothrock's dresses that she wore actually in one of her movies.
Mm-hmm.
So a pretty cool place to go visit.
It is. Now, last year, Sifu Robert took me there to meet Mr. Matsuda and to visit the museum. So, listeners, if you're ever in the Burbank area, go check it out because all of the stuff in there is legit. They're not fakes. They're not reproductions. Every item in there either belongs to the actual owner of the item, whether they're a martial artist or that famous martial artist's family, or it is part of a private collection that someone had obtained. So they're all real artifacts. So go check it out. Wonderful place. Awesome.
Right. Okay, now on to weird news. I'm just going to read a very, very short, very, very short article. This fifth grader was busted for carrying pot to school. Now, he had good intentions, however. Though his intentions may have been innocent, a Virginia fifth grader who brought marijuana to school could face expulsion for his actions, according to media reports.
He brought pot to school. I mean,
right? I know. Exactly. I won't go into my history, but yeah, that was the case. Local police officers responded to a report of a student in possession of marijuana Tuesday, according to Suffolk Police. The driver, elementary student, showed his teacher the drug and said he took it from his father so that his father would stop smoking.
There you go.
Huh.
See the intention? He had good intentions. Okay. Like, he didn't want his father smoking dope anymore. And then call it dope for a reason.
yeah. Huh.
In an email to the Suffolk News Herald, city spokeswoman Diana Klink said, when asked about the marijuana in the presence of the student's mother, she advised the officer that he found it in his father's truck and brought it to school to show his teacher because he wanted his father to stop smoking marijuana.
Oh.
There you go.
Okay.
Awesome kid. If his intentions were pure.
Right.
I'm sure the police officers have heard every story imaginable. Can you imagine saying, I brought this to school because I didn't want my father to smoke it? What are you going to think? Yeah, right.
Exactly.
Sure.
Uh-huh.
But if his intentions were
medicine.
What was that?
I was saying, if his father needed for medical reasons.
Well, that's a good point. But, you know, I wonder if if that was the case, I wonder if fifth grader knew about that this is medicine for dad as opposed to this is medicating dad.
Right.
That's a good analogy, Sifu.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, let's now, these weird laws this week are from the great state of Kansas.
Kansas weird laws. Can't wait to hear these. Okay.
Now, we've all visited vending machines and lost our money at one time or another, whether it was video games or Coke machines, to get soda, whatever. It
right.
says hitting a vending machine that steals your money in the state of Kansas is illegal.
What?
Unfair.
Yeah. Oh, that was good. That
wow.
Hunting rabbits in a motorized boat is also considered illegal. Okay.
Sorry. I'm sorry. I heard hunting rabbits and boat. And I'm like, now what would a rabbit be doing somewhere where you need a motorboat?
To go get them, right? No.
Yeah.
Well, if you remember, now I know, Sifu, you may be too young to remember this.
Huh.
Jimmy, one of our past presidents, Jimmy Carter, was on a boat fishing on I don't know if it was motorized or paddle boat or whatever. He was attacked by a rabbit in the water.
Whoa.
Yeah, I know you're too young to remember Jimmy.
Well, I remember Jimmy. I mean, we had to study Jimmy Carter and all that other stuff in history class and stuff like that, current events and stuff.
Yeah, and that would confirm that she's too young.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if she says she's too young, there's another way you can tell when she was lying.
Yeah, it's called look up my. Just type my name, and I think my birth date is everywhere.
Everywhere.
It's everywhere.
Now, maybe you guys can help me out with what this next one actually is.
Okay.
In Wichita, it is illegal to carry a concealed bean snapper.
What?
What is a bean snapper?
Is that what it said on the
That's what it said.
What's a
Don't look at your notes.
It's illegal to carry a concealed bean snapper.
Right.
Huh.
Okay.
That's weird. I have no idea what a bean snapper is.
Okay, I guess I'm going to have to go ahead and test up and say I'm too young for that one.
In Kansas, it is illegal for restaurants to sell cherry pie a la mode on Sundays.
Well, that sucks.
Yeah. In Kansas, now,
like a blue law? Does it fall under a blue law, something like that?
I know, right?
I think so. It's just like it's selling alcohol in Utah on Sunday.
Hello. Okay.
Yeah. Huh.
Now, I don't know what kind of horns they mean, but in Kansas it's illegal, or it says no musical horns are allowed. Now, I don't know if that means trumpets or bugles or the kind of noisemakers that you might find at Mardi Gras.
Huh.
Okay, right.
Huh. I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe, it kind of makes you wonder if some marching band went down, like, you know, Main Street, like it. 3 a.m. or something like that.
Right. No one may catch fish with their bare hands.
Oh. What do they call
that? A lot of fishermen, don't they?
Yeah. What do they call that when you like catch like catfish with your bare hands?
Imitating a bear?
No, there's this. I saw this on TV, and I guess people do it. I forgot what they call it. I want to say it's called gigging, but I think that's frogs.
Trap fishing, right?
Yeah, catfishing.
Like
yeah, and they, yeah. You know, you go around rocks in the water and stuff like that, and you just got to learn how to like feel around and then just grab that catfish by its, or stick your hand in their mouth, basically.
Hey, you know, there's a contest. I forgot what state it was, but there's actually like a contest that they have annually. People going fish with their hands. Yeah, I forgot what state it was, but that's big somewhere. I want to say Mississippi. You know?
I was going to say North Carolina, but that's where you're living now.
And it may be North Carolina. I don't know.
One of our listeners on the chat board right now, one of our regular listeners, Deborah Evans, she says it's called noodling. That's what it is. It's called
that
noodling.
Is. That's right. Noodling.
Yeah,
that's
noodling.
Right.
It's called noodling, and it's popular in Oklahoma. So,
okay. Oh, got it. Very
yeah.
cool.
Noodling. Thanks, Deb.
Let's see. If a pedestrian crossing any highway in Kansas must be wearing taillights.
Is that a great disturbance in the force?
Okay. I'm just going to go to Walmart right now and get me my taillights. That's what I'm going to do.
Now, the next one is actually on the books in a lot of cities and a lot of states. It is illegal in Kansas to spit on the sidewalk.
Oh.
I've heard that.
Yeah.
I've
I wonder,
that.
Is it because of chewing tobacco, or I wonder, because it's just gross.
Just gross. Just gross, yeah.
Yeah. That's wild.
Yeah. Well, that is the end of my weird laws.
Oh,
but
we
that
love
okay?
weird news. Weird news. I always
well,
love your segment.
I always be careful when you go to Kansas.
That's right.
Well, that's right. Absolutely. That's the moral of this story this week.
That's right. Watch where you walk. And if you walk across the street, make sure you got taillights. That's crazy cool. Oh, my goodness. All righty. So, listeners, our phone number here is 347-677-0699. Now, before we go to a quick PSA break and our formal interview with Professor Patrick McDaniel, I want to feature our trivia question of the week. So, for our listeners out there who are listening for the very first time tonight, every week, when I remember, we have a trivia question of the week. And that's if I remember. And, like, today I think I remembered, like, 2 hours before airtime. So. So what we do for our trivia questions is I ask a trivia question, and the first caller with the first correct answer, and you have to call in, the first caller with the first correct answer gets to win either a chance to be a guest co-host with me and Sifu Robert on an upcoming show, or you get to be a guest. So, and it doesn't matter what your skill is. You know, if your skill is noodling, then you're going to be a guest. But you have to call in. And you know what I used to do in the past is I used to go, oh, no one called in, and I would put it on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page for people to answer. And no, this week I want someone to call in. Darn it.
Call in.
I'm going to have people to call in. All right. So here is our trivia question of the week. What parts of the human body are the only parts that cannot repair themselves? So, I'll ask that again. What parts of the human body are the only parts that cannot repair themselves? 347-677-0699. That's our phone number. If you're the first caller with the first correct answer, you get to win a chance to be a co-host or be a guest on our show. Yay! And, oh, one of my listeners on the chat board says, we can't type it here. Yes. Yes. I'll allow. I'll type.
I would have said no. I want to hear callers.
I know, right? Well, let's see. I'm going to put that on here. So I'm going to write, Sifu Bob says call in.
There you go. Pass that book. Ask the boss. See how she is, Professor McDaniel. She threw me right under the bus.
Well, I want a call. I want people to
yeah,
call in.
Me too.
I know. It's all about being interactive, folks. Interactive
exactly.
With the Dynamic Dojo Radio Show. All right. So before, looks like someone's going to be calling here in a little bit.
Hello.
So we're gonna wait like 30 seconds. And she's all like, if I can find the phone.
If I can find the phone.
Get Skype.
She must be a friend of yours, Sifu.
Yeah, this is This is Deb Evans. She's a regular listener of our show. She listens every week, and she's a friend of mine from Butokukan Karate, which I studied before I got into Kajikembo. And well, it looks like she's looking for the phone. So, so with that said, let's go ahead and take a really short PSA break, and then we'll come back, and if Deb does call in, we'll take her answer then. So otherwise, if anyone else has a guess to the trivia question, what parts of the body are the only parts of the human body that cannot repair themselves, go ahead and give us a call, 347-677-0699. So we'll be back right after the short word from the Ad Council. I'm like, who's it from? From the Ad Council. We'll be right back.
Okay, so 5 tacos of cheese and a large soda, that's $10,012. Please drive around.
$10,000 what?
It's obvious you're buzzed and driving.
I've only had a few. I'm fine.
Yeah, the food's $12, but getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Please drive around. Actually, just park and come in.
Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Need to get some rest. This is the worst headache ever.
Right arm's all tingly all of a sudden. Must have slept on it last night.
I keep losing my balance. These old bones need some exercise.
Granddaddy, what you just said doesn't even make sense. It sounds like gibberish.
Signs like these could be more than what they seem. They could be a sign of stroke.
Sudden weakness or numbness of the face, arm, or leg.
Sudden trouble with vision in one or both eyes.
Sudden trouble walking or difficulty with balance.
Or a sudden intense headache that comes out of nowhere.
If you or someone you know has any of these symptoms, don't wait. Call 911 immediately. You could make a difference in someone's life, someone you love, maybe even your own.
Time lost is brain lost.
Find out more at powertoendstroke.org. Brought to you by the American Heart Association, American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
And now, on with the show.
All right. And we are back. You've just tuned in to the Dynamic Dojo Radio Show with Rashida and Robert. Our special guest tonight is Professor Patrick McDaniel of the Kidokai Kempo System. And looks like we have a caller. Right on. I wonder if this is Deborah Evans. Deb, is this you?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm guessing that you're calling to answer the trivia question, yeah?
I'm going to give it a stab.
All right. Well, let me go ahead and tell the listeners what the trivia question was just one more time. The trivia question was, what parts of the human body are the only parts that cannot repair themselves? And your guess is?
Your internal organs.
Your internal
like your
organs.
Your heart, your liver, your intestine, your lungs.
Can you be a little bit more specific? Because, and the reason why I ask is that, you know, if you remove a part of your liver, or your, then if I remember correctly, the liver can repair itself, not necessarily regenerate, but I don't remember about whether or not it can regenerate, but that can't heal themselves from, like, injury. So I'm going to give you another guess, if you could be a little bit more specific. Ding, 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 ding.
Oh, man.
No. Oh, okay.
Trying to think. But no, can't be any more specific than that.
Okay. Yeah. What parts of the human body are the only parts that cannot repair themselves? Now, me and people, Bob, and Professor McDaniel aren't allowed to answer it because we're already on the air. We've already won that that part. So, any listeners out there who wants to call in, what parts of the human body are the only parts of the human body that cannot repair themselves? And, you know, I'll allow Googling. That's fine. Remember, it's interactive.
Hey, people, you don't have a sound effect of one of those buzzers when they get the answer wrong, though, do you?
Oh, yeah.
There you go. If you
ask for it?
Oh, hey, somebody, oh, Deborah hung up. Oh, Deb hung up. I'm going to write this on the... Thanks for calling, Deb. So, any other people out there? 347-677-0699. Oh, well. Okay. All right. Well, let's go ahead and we're going to start our interview with Professor Patrick McDaniel. So, again, 347-677-0699. If you have any questions about Kaju Kenbo or would like to learn a little bit about the Kido Kai system, please call in. All right. So, thank you again, Professor, for joining us tonight. Thank you.
And thank you for having me.
And
I want to thank you for having the patience while we do our special segments. I know that must be hard waiting that half hour or so. Hey, I'm a martial artist. I'm a seasoned martial artist. So patience is a quality. Absolutely.
And it was fun having you comment during it and stuff like that. So that was really
fun. A lot of fun for me as well.
Yeah. It's really fun. Me and Sifu Bob like to have fun for the first segment. Not that we, you know, become like uber serious for the second half of the show, but we like to have most of our fun at the beginning of the show. All righty. So Professor, can you tell our listeners a little bit about your background? Can you tell us what attracted you to martial arts and when and how you got started in the martial arts?
Okay. Well, what attracted me initially is my father was a sailor. So even though I was born in Texas, with my father being in the Navy, we spent time in California. You know, a lot of the Navy bases are. And that's, but anyway, I remember maybe 5-6 years old watching the Green Hornet. This comes behind a lot of the cowboy movies, you know, with the light crosses and knocking them in the tables and stuff like that, with those kind of action scenes. So I was used to seeing those kind of bar fights on the Western shows. But then here comes the Green Hornet and Kato. You know, nobody knew Bruce Lee at the time, but we knew this cat that did this interesting form of fighting called Kato. And that blew my mind. You know, and I was always been that kind of guy that if I wanted to do something, I want to do something different. I'd never seen anybody fight like that.
Uh-huh.
I'm looking at this, man, my mind is going wild. So I'm talking to my father about it, and, you know, at that time, you know, in America at that time, it's just hard to kind of find places like that, you know, that would teach you the kind of form that Bruce Lee was doing. So where did I go next? To my imagination, baby.
Right on.
I used my imagination, and every time I saw a show, I practiced on my own. I imagined on my own. I was the superhero. I created these villains, and I knocked these villains out, just like an average kid, you know, an average boy, use their imagination and turn themselves into heroes. And that's what really got me interested in that form of fighting, you know. So I wanted to do it for years and years and years. And after my mother and father divorced, we spent some time in Los Angeles where my mother did a lot of studio singing and background singing and things of that nature. But I eventually ended up back in Texas living with my grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in West Texas in a place called Abilene, Texas, where I was actually born. And there was a karate school that was kind of uptown. And I would drive by, when I'm riding with my grandparents, I would drive by and look at it, walk by and look at it. And this place was built with no windows, and you couldn't see inside. And it was like it was some secret fortress, and you couldn't figure out how to get inside. Really, all you saw was karate at the top of the building, you know. And later in the years, I found that you had to go down an alleyway to actually get to it, you know. But I just didn't know how to communicate with anybody inside that dojo.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I later figured out it was a taekwondo system, but I later figured out that that's not what I was supposed to study. I was supposed to study Kaju Kenbo. I was
right on.
With my mind, the way my mind works, I was supposed to study Kaju Kenbo. When I was 13, I worked as a volunteer camp leader for a recreation center in Abilene, Texas. And this was during a summer program where we've got probably 40 kids that needed things to do in the summer while parents were at work. You know those programs.
Oh, right.
And I was one of the camp leaders. And, you know, days are going, and we're doing our regular thing in the park, and we're doing our little studies and our, our games inside the gymnasium and just regular days. And I'm in the gym one day, and here comes three gentlemen walking through the door with these black uniforms on. And I said, those look like karate geese, but they're black. So that kind of threw me off because I was used to seeing them white. This is, you know, 72, 73, right? So one of the guys comes up to me and says, excuse me, could you tell me where I can find, you know, the director? And I was like, sure, she's inside the office. And goes and talks to the director, and these guys come out, and I'm super curious. So I'm like, what is this about? And she's like, oh, yeah, this is the karate program we're starting. Well, you know, I was turning flips in my mind. Turning flips in my mind. So being a camp leader, I wasn't sure that I could be involved in the program, but I actually stayed in the gymnasium as all the kids got together and these guys started teaching the fundamentals of Kaijukenbo Karate.
You know? Oh, awesome.
Yes. Now, my two little sisters and my smaller cousin were part of that class. So you know what I did once the program was over for the day. We went home, and I worked with my sisters and my cousins to go over and say, who's that? This instructor had taught them. So I made myself a student outside that class. Well,
awesome.
They saw that I was so interested in that class because I was there every time they showed up. And one of the instructors came to me, which happened to be, at that time, Sifu George Jackson. Of course, he's Grand Master now. At that time, he came to me, and he said, hey, you know, why don't you get involved with the class? I see you always watching. And I told him, I said, I wasn't sure I could be involved. And the director happened to overhear the conversation. And she says, you can be involved in anything the kids are involved with. I said, well, there we go, you know. And when I lined up, of course, being the newbie, I lined up at the back of the class. But then they saw my technique, and they moved me to the front of the line.
Oh.
Wow.
Yeah. Now,
and this is without a white belt yet, right, or any type of belt?
This is without the white belt because, you know, what they don't know is I was already a martial artist in my mind.
That's right.
Very good.
Very
in my mind, I was already a martial artist. So, the interesting thing is most kids would watch a television show, and they'll try to mimic the technique and not really know the principle behind the technique.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not saying I knew the principle behind the technique, but I felt that there was a way to do it. And I did it that way anyway, whether I knew I was doing the principle or not. And they saw that I was using the principles of the technique. And they said, well, have you studied before? And I was like, well, no, no one's ever taught me, but I've been practicing since the Green Hornet.
That's so awesome.
So,
now,
that's
awesome. Now, other than the Taekwondo, you didn't check out any other martial arts, correct? You just, boom, right into the Kaijukenbo, right?
Well, you know, anything I saw, you know, I would look at because all martial arts interest me, whether it was judo or Taekwondo or anything, Ishinru. I paid attention to everything that was martial arts. Unfortunately, in that part of West Texas, it just wasn't, you just couldn't walk around the corner and find the karate school anywhere. You know, it was that one school, you know, that really stood out in Abilene, Texas. And if it wasn't for the Air Force Base, that's what I felt to mention. There's an Air Force Base in Abilene, Texas, and that's where George Jackson and his assistant came from. They came from Dyess Air Force Base.
Awesome.
The Air Force Base is what brought other guys in that were from different states and, you know, had been to different countries, being in the military, that started bringing in these martial arts systems. So that's how Kaijukenbo got to Abilene, Texas.
Awesome.
The Dyess Air Force Base. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So if it wasn't for that, I wouldn't have known of Kaijukenbo. But that, Kaijukenbo being, you know, the style that it is, the original mixed martial arts, because they put those five systems together to get that system started. Those five fundamental systems where they mixed in, you know, the best of karate, judo, jiu-jitsu, and kung fu. That was a creative concept. That was Seijo Imperato saying, I need to do something different. Well, that's me, baby. You know? Something different? Get out of here. That's what I needed to know, man. You know, so that's what really got me started. Now, another thing I really need to mention that's very important because I consider myself with my age, you know, I'm in mid-50s now, but in my age, I think I'm fortunate to have grown up in America because I've seen the transition from segregation to integration.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I first started going to school, I was going to an all-black school, you know. And with the conditioning in a black neighborhood, there are certain things that, you know, I grew up, you know, didn't think that black people were supposed to do. You know what I mean? You know,
sure.
Being young, growing up in a black neighborhood, these things we weren't supposed to do. So I'm looking at Bruce Lee being Asian, you know, doing martial arts. And so when I practiced my martial arts, guess what I had to do? I had to pretend that I wasn't black anymore. I had to pretend I was an Asian guy. You know?
Huh.
Yes. I mean, you know,
wow.
this is a boy in his imagination, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So when I saw George Jackson walk in and he was a black man, I was like, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what really put the icing on the cake is I saw a movie called Flee the Hard Way.
Mm-hmm.
Jim Kelly.
Right.
Yeah. So now we've got a black guy who's making movies doing these techniques that I saw Bruce Lee doing years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I'm set off now. So no longer do I have to pretend to be something I'm not. I can be myself and create something in this art and master this art, create something in this art, because Kaji Kimbo gave me the freedom to think that it doesn't have to be one way. It doesn't
mm-hmm.
have to be one way. You can use your imagination. You can use your creativity, because the word art stood out to me, you know? It stood out. And art is creative, man, you know? You don't call it art if you're doing the same thing the same way for 20, 30, and 40 years. That's not
mm-hmm.
art, you know? So that's what really stood out to me with that. So I was supposed to. Yes, I looked at other styles, but I was supposed to be a Kaji Kimbo style.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's very cool. Very cool. Now, for our listeners that are not familiar with Kaji Kimbo, you had briefly touched on it, but can you explain to our listeners who might not be familiar with Kaji Kimbo what Kaji Kimbo is?
Well, with Cesar Imparato, Adriano Imparato and Joe Imparato, they're brothers, they were actually avid Eskrima and Kimbo style. You know, and I won't go into a lot of details because those guys have a very colorful history. But just
mm-hmm.
kind of, you know, break it down fundamentally. They were avid Kimbo style. And Imparato had an idea because of certain activities that they got involved with in Honolulu, Hawaii, that, well, you know, if we're going to be the best sufficient stylists, you know, because of things that we've been involved with, you know, in Hawaii, we need to check out some other things that work, you know. So
mm-hmm.
instead of just having good hand movement, rapid-fire hand movement, we need to figure out what it takes to go circular. We need to figure out what it takes to have those strong kicks. We need to figure out what it takes, you know, for takedown throws and locks. And so they invited these other gentlemen in, and they call themselves the Black Belt Society. Now, these gentlemen were masters in Korean karate. These gentlemen were masters in judo and jiu-jitsu and kung fu, and, of course, Imparato himself, you know, and Kimpo. And they worked together, this Black Belt Society, and they just kind of incorporated the best of self-defense concepts from what they knew, and they kind of put them together. They developed the name of Kaji Kimbo, and if you spell out Kaji Kimbo, it's K-A-J-U-K-E-N-B-O, which is karate, judo and jiu-jitsu, Kimbo, and the B-O is for Chinese boxing, which, hey, that's kung fu. You know,
mm-hmm.
so that's basically where that started, you know?
Awesome.
So
very cool.
Very cool. It's America's original mixed martial art. And being a Kaji Kimbo practitioner myself, when I do tell visitors that come to my studio that our curriculum is based on Kaji Kimbo and the branches of Wen Hopkin Do within it, and I say it's America's original mixed martial art, then all of a sudden people just assume that we wear, you know, the tight shorts and the fingerless gloves and, you know, all of the modern MMA type stuff. And it's not unfortunate, but I think it's funny that when we say mixed martial art, that it automatically goes to, that people's minds automatically go to UFC. Yeah, cage fighting type of stuff. And, you know, I don't blame modern MMA at all, because it is very popular. But Kaji Kimbo itself, you know, yeah, America's first original mixed martial art. Yeah. Now, Katakembo, now I know the training can be pretty tough. Can you describe the training that you went through in your dojo?
Well, and you know what, and I think just from kind of reading the history of some of the guys that we call, and I don't mean this in a bad way, but we call the old guys Katakembo monsters.
Yeah.
because they were rough, you know. Mm-hmm. But I just recently found out that I'm considered one of the Katakembo monsters now on the world. Okay.
Oh no.
Yeah. No. Oh no. Anyway. Here's the example that I tell my students all the time that just really shines a lot of light on how rough you expect it to be as a Katakembo style. And it's because if you're going to be in a fight and you don't know what it feels like to be hit, you're not going to be successful in that fight. And if we tell you this technique works, how do you know it works? Well, mm-hmm. you feel it, you know? Now, when I was training with Sifu Paul Jackson, not related to George Jackson, because George Jackson, I was only under him for like one summer. And then Paul Jackson stepped in, another Sifu. But when we trained with Paul Jackson, we had an air-conditioned facility we could work out in the recreation center. But he chose to take us out to the tennis court, a concrete mm-hmm. tennis court in West Texas in June, July, and August.
Oh, yeah.
Right. We're on a tennis court, mm-hmm. you know. So that just kind of gives you an idea, you know, of the training. And once you learn the concept of a self-defense drill or a self-defense technique or a trick or counter, it was important that you made a certain degree of contact.
Mm-hmm.
If the contact wasn't made, then the technique's not done right. Mm-hmm. And we look for the person receiving the contact to respond and say, yes, those were good shots.
Mm-hmm.
If they're not saying those are good shots, you got to put some more in it, baby.
I remember going home with like black eyes and split lips and, you know, and thinking to myself, oh my God, I am not coming back. And there I'd be the next day,
the next day
with the black eye, can't see nothing out of my eye and, you know, can't talk as my lip is like, you know, swollen to heck and, you know, but that's how my teacher was.
So you knew exactly what I was talking about.
Yeah,
right?
the visit to the dentist.
Yes. That's a very bad.
I can't see my lip. I can't see my lip. Yeah. Oh, see, now I'm going to have to look that up on Pandora now and listen to that. Right. So yeah, those were the days, and that's what my teacher used to say too. Is that it was my first day also when I came in, and you know I did karate for like 20 years, but then my first day, my partner slapped me right in the face with a round kick, and I'm like, what the hell? And I went, oh, this is Katakembo. And from that day forward, I knew that if I got hit, then either I didn't block. Or if my partner didn't acknowledge the hit and say, oh, good job, then, you know, I either was too weak on the technique or I didn't apply it correctly. And that's what really attracted me to Katakembo also because, you know, in my previous karate classes, we made contact, but most of the time it was accidental. You know what I mean? Yeah, it was accidental. And, you know, and if you weren't expecting it, then it was like, oh, ow, that hurt. But, you know, Katakembo taught me that no matter what, you know, you're going to get hit. Deal with it, you know. And
this is on purpose.
This is on purpose. Exactly.
Well, that's funny you say that, Sifu. I was watching the class. They were doing like a randori, and they were practicing the wrist grabs. Well, this one kid, you know, when you reach our age, everybody's a kid if you're under 30, right?
Right.
Was doing a double wrist grab on this one girl that was actually around our age, and she was doing a simulated kick to the groin, but he wasn't releasing the grip.
Mm-hmm.
And she looked at me. Now, she knew I was a practitioner, but I wasn't part of the class. She looked at me, and I said, kick him. He'll release the grip. You know what I mean? So he wasn't acknowledging that he just got kicked in the groin.
Right, right.
If I get kicked in the groin, my grip's releasing.
Yeah.
You know, that's just the way it is. Now, Professor McDaniel, I want to ask you a question. I believe you were coming up during a transitional period where there was a time in the early, mid-70s where no sparring gear was worn because it wasn't easily obtainable. Sparring gear, or did you come up in the old school way?
Let me tell you something. When I first started competing in 74 and 75, there was no sparring gear.
Okay.
There was no sparring. You're exactly right. Exactly right. So what you felt was what you felt. Now, you know, we took the football mouthpieces, okay, the football mouthpieces, and check this out, because you're going to know exactly what I'm talking about, and the baseball cups.
Yeah.
Now, when you use a baseball cup for martial arts, you're not taken care of.
Right.
Because they only cover the top part. They're not touch under.
Right.
Ouch.
That's right. So I am very appreciative of the person who said, you know what, we need to develop another cup for martial arts. Thank you very much.
Yeah. And I think that's the reason why that person is probably very rich right now. That patent on the new groin protectors are really cool. And the groin protectors and the chest protectors for women too. Thank goodness.
Yeah.
Because when I was coming up, and I know Deborah Evans on the chat board can attest, we didn't have it either because it was the 70s. At least for me, it was the 70s. I think she started later in karate. But the only thing that we had were these, like, sewn together foam things that we put on our shins. And that was it. Yeah, that was it. Yeah, pretty much. And we were expected to pull our punches for safety. But, you know, like I said earlier, you know, sometimes accidents happen. So it was really weird for me doing Kajikembo and having to make contact. Having my teacher tell my partner, come at her head. You know, if she gets raped tomorrow, it's your fault because you're not training her. And it was true. And, you know, I'm really thankful for what Sifu Faircloth had taught during that. He used to get so upset when the guys would not come after the women's heads. And then they'd end up working with him. And then it'd be like, oh, well, see, you should have just came at my head. That way you don't work with Sifu. Now, there are several branches of Kajikembo. Now, the branch of Kajikembo that you studied, was that the original?
No, it wasn't. In fact, when people are reading Kajikembo, and this is from my understanding and just from the history that I've been in Kajikembo, around the Southwest, you're going to see the spelling difference. You know, where there's an N as in Nancy, then there's an M as in Michael.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, the system that I studied was the M as in Michael.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Now, there's some stories behind that transition that I really don't want to get into. You know what I mean? Because
I know exactly what you mean.
Okay. I don't want to get into that.
We won't get into that.
But anyway, that is that's the variation. The variation that I studied was the Kajikembo spelled with the M.
Mm-hmm.
After I met with Grandmaster Richard Peralta, is when I found out, you know, some things on why that happened. Now, first let me say that when they taught me Kajikembo, there was no explanation about that other spelling. You know, all I learned was Kajikembo.
Right.
So when I first saw Kajikembo spelled the other way, and it was either Karate Illustrated or Black Belt Magazine 1, when I first saw the other spelling, I thought it was a misprint. You know, I was like, hey, they spelled it wrong. <You know? laughs> That's supposed to be an M, you know.
Right.
So, then I found out, you know, kind of some of the things that surround that changing. Anyway, but yeah, I studied the M.
Oh, awesome.
Which was basically the Dana Olewa and Richard Peralta.
Very cool. Very cool.
And those gentlemen were under Alureus, and I'm sure everybody knows them.
Uh-huh.
That is, yeah, so that's my lineage is Alureus lineage. And Don Nahualewa and Richard Peralta, they were like the first couple of black belts under Alureus. So I am in good company, very good company. You know, I'm pretty high on that chain, so I like that.
Yeah, that's a strong lineage.
Yes, it is. Yes, it
very
is.
Strong. Now, your system of Kidokai is derived from Kajikembo with an M, correct?
Yes, it is.
Can you tell our listeners a little bit about your development of the Kidokai system and what some of the key elements in the curriculum? Well, you don't have to give us your curriculum. I mean, we don't want you to give us your teaching secrets or anything. But what are some key elements, and how did you go about developing Kidokai?
The interest was mainly for children. Mainly for children, because I was a young instructor who attracted a lot of young students.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, the way I was taught by Sifu Paul Jackson would have ran all the children away.
Okay.
Because he was a hard guy. He was a very hard character. And I was, I was young under him as well, but I was just too determined. And, like I said, I was already a martial artist in my mind anyway. So you're not going to run me away, Cat. I don't care how hard I get kicked. But anyway... I stuck with it, and I had to try to develop a way to get the message across to kids that wasn't so adult, because Sifu Paul Jackson was an adult. And when I say that, I mean if he wanted to express something a certain way, he didn't care how it came out. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
He was an adult.
He was an adult.
And,
right.
If you're too young in that class, just suck it up, because he's going to say it.
Right.
But anyway, that's one element that I had to depend on in trying to develop something for kids. And the other element, which is very important, is my instructors were airmen. So they're not going to be around long. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
They weren't from where. So they're going to leave. And when Sifu Paul Jackson left me in West Texas, I was the only Kajikembo representative there. I'm 17, 18 years old, and I'm the only Kajikembo representative there. And a lot of what I wanted to get from him, I was not able to get as far as learning how to teach. So I had to go into something.
Mm-hmm.
And what I went into is reading philosophy from Matsuyama, from Ed Parker, from a very ancient Taekwondo book that was given to me by another martial artist, and I'm reading their philosophy. And I'm reading the training philosophies and just trying to find out where these masters are going, And by reading those philosophies, I had to feel the best way to project my technique to certain students, to the children mainly, and the students. Now, I live in an apartment complex, and I had a weird shift where I could stay up at night, late at night, And I'd go downstairs and get under the streetlight at night and start going through my technique. Of course, everybody in the apartment complex felt crazy, because they didn't know what I was doing. The man is out there fighting chattel. So, which was cool for me, because when it was time to do laundry, I could go to the laundry room and they would leave me by myself. the crazy guys in the laundry room, leave them alone. So, just kind of reading these different philosophies and reading from Matsuyama and from the Taekwondo book and from Ed Parker's book, I developed these codes of discipline, These are set goals to improve yourself. Stop doing that which you do not like. Nothing is impossible to a willing mind. Patience, the essential quality. I'm learning these things in the Declaration of Defense. I come to you with only karate. You know it.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm checking out all these things. And the thing that really stood out to me is when I read an Ed Parker book that said, the hands are so versatile, it would take three lifetimes to master them.
Mm.
So if it's going to take three lifetimes to develop my hands, I better get busy now, I better get busy now, and if I want to project an authentic, original message using my character and my personality to my students, then I'm going to get busy and incorporate that into what I learned from the two sequels that I was under at that time, And
yes,
that's
sir.
Basically what developed what was originally the Kajikembo Noble Method.
Mm-hmm.
And Noble comes from my first name, because Patrick is the noblemen, our nobility, philosophy.
Oh, uh-huh.
Right. So that's where the noble method comes from. Well, this is what I'm incorporating into what I've learned from these guys, because what I had was short. I didn't get enough from my instructor. So what do? Man, I have to add some things. So what I had to focus on was a lot of target drills.
Mm-hmm.
So I call them noble drills, or noble drills to walk the body. So I'm focusing on these target drills. And with the Kaji Kimbo self-defense drills, with the tricks and the counters, and you know what they are, you know, to get the kids to be fast and accurate on those targets, we first go through my target drills. These are the noble drills. And there's 7 drills to walk the body, the first one that I got them started with. And those drills became so popular. People from other styles started trying to borrow my drills, you know.
Oh.
Yeah. Whoa. So anyway, I developed those noble drills. I developed those snapshot drills. I developed the first rudiment. I developed progressive hands, which is off the chart. Whenever you see progressive hands, your mind will be blown.
Cool.
So then later on comes my noble katas and my ki katas, which for Kido Kai. And Kido Kai translated to the noble way, you know, so that it wouldn't be a lot of... There was a discussion about 8 years ago on one of the online, you know, chat systems online that was really concerned and confused about Kaji Kimbo, the noble method, because Master John Bishop, you know, acknowledged me in his book, the first Kaji Kimbo book. He acknowledged the noble method. So people were asking about it. You know, here's this cat that comes from the Southwest, and a lot of the guys in the West and Hawaii didn't know a whole lot about me, you know. But this noble method, it was tearing the Southwest up. You know, I introduced a lot of Kaji Kimbo to parts of Texas that, you know, people, I'd get up to do a kata in competition and I'd say my style is Kaji Kimbo, and they all look like, what? You know?
Mm-hmm.
So I introduced it in that part of the country heavily, and it didn't hurt that I had a very, very, very consistent winning team. Consistent winning team. So that just really put us on the map in that part of the country. You know, so I've got definitely a strong reputation for making these kids stand out, you know, developing what they're doing well, and bam, put us on the map. But that's where a lot of Kido Kai comes from, is I was left by myself and had to figure out a way to continue teaching.
Well, it sounds like a very strong method, very strong. That's awesome. Well, we had a caller from area code 336, and unfortunately, I couldn't screen the call. But if you're the caller of 336 from area code 336, please call back because we will get to your call. It's hard for me to screen calls while I'm actually online without a call screener. Oh, there they are. Area code 336. Okay, area code 336. You're on the Dynamic Dojo Show. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, this is Afu Zigo.
Hi there.
Hi. I'm one of the Professor McDino's students, and I have two short questions. I'm sorry about my English.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay. You're doing just fine.
I have a limit of English. My question is, what is the most important thing what gave him the martial arts? What was the most important thing he learned from martial arts, and why is that?
Oh, good question.
Yes, it is. It's exercise the passion. You know what I mean? You have to if you feel the passion for something, you have to exercise that passion. I heard something from Dr. Maya Angelou, who says, pursue the things you love doing and do them so well, people can't take their eyes off you. Ooh, I love that. How profound.
Ooh, that is nice.
So when you have a passion for something, that's what just really kept me with the martial arts, is because of the passion. And once I learned how to project it to other students, that's what made it work for me so well. That's what made it work.
Awesome. Awesome. Very cool. Do you have any other questions? Or?
Yes. And I have another question.
Sure.
When was the point he felt that's the point when he can start teaching?
Oh, that's another great question. So when was the point that you felt that you could start teaching? Were you given your blessing by Sifu Jackson, or how did that go?
Yes, I was given the blessing because he left.
Oh, so you were it. You were, he left and you were it.
But that is an interesting question, because I remember a period in class. There were about 18 kids in class. And I remember Sifu Paul Jackson asking everybody, why are you here? What are you taking this class for? And, of course, the most popular answer is, well, for self-defense. If I'm attacked, I want to feel confident about protecting myself. It keeps me in shape. I want to feel better about myself. Boom, bam, bang. Those are the popular answers, and you know that.
Mm-hmm.
But when it got to me, I simply said, I want to teach. Bam. I want to
right
teach.
On.
I'm about 15 years old at this point, I want
right
to
on. Wow, 15 years old, that's young.
Yes.
I mean, I started teaching when I was 15 years old, too, and it was unheard of back in, back in the 70s. And, wow, that is so cool, Professor. That's awesome. Awesome, awesome. Well, thank you for calling Area Code 336. Those were some great questions. Thank you. I'm going to go ahead and put you on hold. And if you can listen to the rest of the show on your phone or online if you'd like. But if you have another question, just press 1 again. But I'll go ahead and put you on hold. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you a lot.
All right. That's awesome when students call. All righty. So, Professor and Sifu Bob, why don't we do this? Let's go ahead and take just a very short break. So that way Professor can get a drink of water and just kind of rest a little bit. And so that way our listeners can get a drink of water and do whatever they need to do for about 4 minutes. Does that sound good?
That's good.
All righty. Great. Well, we will be back right after this quick tune by Desiree. We'll be back in about 4 minutes.
You gotta be bold, you gotta be wiser.
All right, and we are back, and that was Desiree with You Gotta Be. You've just tuned in to the Dynamic Dojo Radio Show with Restita and Robert. Our phone number here is 347-677-0699. And I just want to remove...
Did you get my text?
Yeah.
You suck. I thought, boy, that was rude. Wait a minute, I'm mutish.
Yeah, see, I wasn't ignoring you. No, I did...
Wait.
Well, you... I had that problem with that conference call with the Masters Hall of Fame people. I put myself on mute because the rest of my class was like banging on pads and stuff like that, and then Hunchy Dan had what? Like, how do I unmute my phone? And with that said, 347-677-0699. I just want to remind our listeners about our trivia question. And I think we might have an answer, but they just need to call in. But the trivia question that we mentioned earlier was, what parts of the human body are the only parts of the human body that cannot repair themselves? So if you're the first caller with the first correct answer, you get to be a guest co-host on an upcoming show or be a guest in an upcoming episode for either a forum or as a interview-only guest. So that's how that works.
Very
so
cool.
If we get a call on that.
I do have one more shout-out, Sifu.
Okay.
Somebody just posted on our Facebook page, Elaine Umano. There is a tournament in the high desert, March 9th, 2013. Nick Rubio presents the Desert Valley Karate Championships at the Palm Springs Pavilion, 201 South Pavilion Way, Palm Springs, California, 92262. If you're in the Palm Springs area, check it out.
Wow, that is the high desert.
Yeah.
I miss Palm Springs. But, looks like we got a caller. Area code 253. Is this Deborah again?
Yeah.
Hey, cool. Cool. You got an answer for the trivia question?
Yep, it's your teeth.
Teeth. That is correct. Yay. Yay. Cool. So you get to be a guest co-host, actually, on an upcoming episode. So I'll just get with you on that.
Okay.
So you can be a
guest. You know where to find me, Facebook, Skype,
yep.
You know.
On the air, whatever. Yeah, you bet.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it is your teeth, listeners. Your teeth are the only parts of your body that cannot repair themselves. So if you fall down and you chip a tooth, it's not going to heal itself. You're going to end up with that. You're going to end up with a chip in your tooth until you get a crown or a filling or something. So, yeah, that's it. Whereas a lot of our other organs, such as your skin, it does heal itself. Parts of your liver can be taken out, and it will heal itself. Parts of your lung can be taken out, and it will heal itself, and it will function. So lots of parts in your body will heal themselves except your teeth, which sucks. And that's why dentists make a lot of money. So... All right. Thank you for calling, Deb. I'll get a hold of you as far as an upcoming episode you can join us for, okay?
All righty.
All righty. Thanks, Deb. All righty. Let's get back to our interview. Our special guest tonight is Professor Patrick McDaniel. Awesome. So, Bob, do you have any questions?
Well, I do. You know, Professor, I've always been into helping kids out, you know, guiding them along the way. I noticed in your bio you're involved in a mentoring program. Can you tell us a little bit?
Well, that is with the Cabarrus County School System in North Carolina. And what happened with that is I went to an after-school program director, and I asked that after-school program director if they had any time during one of the days of the week that I could just come over and do some martial arts. Okay, well, I started off with about maybe 10 or 11 kids, okay? 10, 11 kids, and, you know, we're doing well, and you know how kids are. If they like something, then they talk about it. So this keto kite system spread like wildfire around the school, all right? So now it's grown from 12 to 63.
Wow.
And the administrator had noticed some things about, you know, certain kids that may have been having some behavior problems, some focusing problems, you know the average story, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so the administrator finally came to me and said, well, I'm looking at this, and these kids seem to be doing this, and this improvement here and improvement there. I'm going to start sending some kids to you, you know, as far as the martial arts program, and I want you to know exactly what we're having to deal with in the school system so that you can focus on that. And I said, sure, you know, bring it on, you know. I want to know what it was like. So after they did that, then I've got more involved in them assigning certain kids to me so I can come and eat lunch with them, and I can kind of talk to them about things they did over the weekend, and everybody's excited about eating lunch with me, you know. And so that's kind of where that thing came from. A lot of that experience came from a group home organization where kids were at a group home, and I told one of the directors, let me teach these kids martial arts. And I taught those kids martial arts. And we would go to competition, and they would see how well the kids did, how well they behaved. Their points were better inside the group home itself. And so that's kind of what I picked to the after-school director when I wanted to get that program started. And the school administrators picked up on it as well. So that's where the mentoring program comes from.
Very cool. Very cool. Because, you know, like a lot of adults that don't do martial arts or aren't familiar with the many benefits that martial arts can give, many times adults will have that stereotype that martial arts teaches violence. And
Exactly. And
unfortunately, that's a myth. And you know that. I know that. I work with kids a lot, too. And, you know, it's so refreshing to talk with other people that work with kids in mentoring programs, after-school programs, to give kids an outlet and to give kids someone to talk to, people that really care about,
exactly,
you know, what's going on in their lives as opposed to, you know, someone that just, you know, as opposed to an adult that just hears you. That, you know, they appreciate someone that listens instead of just hears. So this is just so cool what you're doing with the kids. That's really cool. Very cool. Now, speaking of teaching and mentoring, what is your most favorite thing about teaching and sharing with others?
It's learning how to teach. Learning how to teach. The process that you go through to make sure that you can get the message across to as many people as possible. It's just that's very cool. It just works with my character and my personality to try to find out the best way to get the message across. And you know, you can't reach everybody, you know?
Right.
But you try. If they're interested, you want to try. And I teach. I don't have a solid curriculum. If you understand what I'm talking about, to where my system is not written down. You know, it's not written down chronologically. I can't teach that way. If I taught that way, I would lose a lot of students. I wouldn't get the message across. Imparato wrote, no two people are the same. So you can teach them 1,000 techniques, but if you don't know how to apply it, then you've taught them nothing.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So when I read that, I figured out, well, okay, if I've got a group of people that I can teach what I call eye patterns first, and they excel well, but I've got another group that's having a hard time with eye patterns. But, hey, why don't I teach them peacock? Why don't I teach them variation kata? And they excel there. So I've got a group of kids that might learn kata 1, 2, 3 in an I form. Then I've got another group that might learn 1, 2, 3 in a key form. But they both excel. They're better in key form. They excel better in I form. I'm gonna provide that. You know, I'm not going to say, no, you must learn these forms in order to progress in this style. Can't do that. I have to learn how to get the message across for them. And I have to definitely learn to be myself, you know, because as a young instructor, I try to mimic my instructor. It didn't work. I had to learn to be myself, you know.
Right.
Very cool.
You throw my character in it. So the most important thing about teaching is learning how to teach, because you're learning every day, you know. I've been doing this for like 41 years coming up on, and I had students just the other day that brought up something that I'm like, wow, I have to implement that in what I'm doing now. You know,
right on.
It's an 8-year-old. Yeah, it's an 8-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who asked a question, and I was like, you know, I don't know. But now, I'm going to work on that now. You know what I mean? And that's too cool.
Right on. Right on. So you're a conceptual type of a teacher as opposed to, you know, by the book. You got to learn this kata one, kata two, pinyon four, pinyon five, in order, or you don't get your purple belt. And
I can't
do
it that way.
It is tough. It is tough. And it's so refreshing to meet people that do that. That's just so awesome. Bob, do you have any questions? I know this is we're having such a great time.
Absolutely. This is amazing.
Yeah.
And by the way, I muted again. So I was yelling at you again. Sorry.
I'm like, Bob, where's Bob? Well, I heard you almost drop the phone or something, and then I was like, oh, well.
Wow. I found it very interesting, Professor McDaniel, that you're a poet and philosopher. Do you find a spiritual connection in your writing and your martial arts?
Definitely. Definitely. It's part of the character. And I want to say, as a young boy, my mother, who didn't know she was a philosopher, she wasn't trying to be, but she wanted me to have a good character and a good personality. So she talked to me. And when I say talk, I mean talk. She didn't talk to me. If I was 8 years old, she didn't talk to me like an 8-year-old. Whatever I didn't understand, she found a way to make me understand it so that I could grow up treating people and myself a certain way. So she had all these things that she would tell me, and they would stay in my head. They would stay in my head. And definitely, I might not have the experience at the time she tells me, but 2-3 years later, bam, I'm facing it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm remembering that.
Wow.
And I know how to treat people. So I have this thing in my head, so I'm looking at something and I'm studying something, I have to come up with a way that hits me on the inside first before I can project it to people outside. So I make it work on the inside first. I heard a pastor many, many, many years ago say, what comes from the heart touches the heart. Well, I use that daily in my martial arts teaching when I'm trying to get my students to express the kata the way I want them to express the kata. What comes from the heart touches the heart. So if I can feel your kata, you're on the right track. If I'm just looking at a lot of memorized moves, we've got some more work to do, baby.
Mm-hmm.
I want to feel this kata because every good black belt appreciates a good form, a form they can get into, a form they can feel. So I use that philosophical sense, and I come up with them to help me project it. Like one that I actually use my philosophy volume of different quotes is, if we are properly trained to defend ourselves for maximum results, then it most behooves us to avoid conflict with all our power. How bad is that?
Mm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The only time my mother became a philosopher is when she had a belt in her hand.
That's pretty good philosophy right there. And it works.
Oh my gosh.
Now, Professor McDaniel, you're coming. Well, I also find your life is like an open book. It's amazing what you've done and where you're going and what you've experienced. You're also coming out. Now, this is a shameless plug, and I expect a signed copy. You're coming out with a line.
Okay.
With a line of martial arts posters under, let's see if I can get this right, the Noble Concept Unlimited, which I'm assuming is your own brand.
Yes, sir, it is. Thank you so much for mentioning that.
Tell me about it. What inspires you to do this kind of work? And are these original, because we know they're original posters, but are they of known figures? What are they exactly?
Well, these are just like I was previously explaining, the things that I come up with, to try to help myself understand something and to try to get the message projected to others. They are the quotes that I come up with. And when I started on Facebook, I wanted to get messages across to other people, but I started out writing quotes from other poets, from other philosophers. I started out putting their quotes in. you know, seeing how many hits it got. I just want to know if you understood this quote, because if the country is going through a certain, you know, dilemma, or, you know, if it's the prices of gas and everybody is weirded out, and then you hear a lot of people, or you read a lot of posts and quotes where, you know, people are having problems with their relationship, or they're mad at somebody, then I'll throw a quote on to try to take their mind somewhere else. You know, people read a quote and they'll go, hey, yeah, that's right. And it kind of changes their direction for a moment. You know, now, I don't know how long, but it changes their direction for a moment. And so I did this for about a year and finally decided, let me throw one of my quotes on and see how people receive it, you know. And I would throw one of my quotes on, and people received it well. So I did another and another and another. And I'd wait a while and I'd put another one back up. And so finally there's a man from West Texas named Don Burden. When I was a boy in West Texas, he would come through the community. Let me just say this. He was one of the mentors of my community. He would come through the community. He was a piano player, and he led choirs. And he would pull some kids out of the community, put us in a choir, and we'd put together a show, you know. And I always remembered him, and apparently he always remembered me. He read one of my quotes, and he gave me a call. He said, brother, you wrote that quote. And I said, sure. He said, how many of them you got? I said, oh, I think I'm probably up to 100 or so now. And he said, yeah, man. He said, yeah. The kind of work I'm doing right now, I want to help you put those things together. Throw one at me real quick. So what I threw at him is what I originally called the Ode to the Dojo. You hear what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Ode to the Dojo. And he heard me, and he said, I'm going to need you to write that out for me. Send it to me, and I'm going to throw you some stuff back, right, as far as ideas. Mm-hmm. So I wrote that to him, and he immediately came back and said, that's a poster. He said, now, with my organization, I can get your posters and your quotes out there. So let's start working on branding of what you're doing. And so that's kind of where that came from.
Very cool.
Oh, Sifu, what you did is so cool just now.
Huh.
You posted one of his quotes on your wall.
I did. Earlier, Professor McDaniel said something that really hit home to me. It was. I have to make it work on the inside first before I can make it work on the outside. And it just stuck with me. And I'm like, I have to post this and quote Professor Patrick. Because it's so true, like you were saying earlier. I mean, if someone just, for example, just memorizes a bunch of, you know, curriculum written on a piece of paper, you know, academically they've learned, but intrinsically, probably not.
Exactly.
So the intrinsic portion, whether it's martial arts or life in general, you know, you have to make it work on the inside before it comes out on the outside, or, you know, for it to be applicable. And it was wonderful advice. And I like to post great quotes on my page. Just to get the, you know, get the word out, you know, and remind people that, hey, you know, that it's that it isn't all just fists and feet. So awesome. So thank you for that idea that I just posted on my wall. I quoted you on it.
Thank you.
And yeah, awesome.
And she did give you credit for it.
Yes.
Out of sight.
Very cool. Definitely. Me and Sifu Bob definitely need to figure out a way to, like, friend you on Facebook or something. Because
I'm a friend of his on Facebook.
Oh, are you? Okay.
Yeah.
Very cool. Good.
Now, Professor McDaniel, you know, we all have influences coming up in the arts. You said one of your biggest influences was Jim Kelly. When you were growing up, I noticed you said you were watching Green Hornet, Kato. Were you also a big movie buff and, you know, watched Enter the Dragon and mouth the words as they were saying it, that kind of thing?
Yes. I'm still a movie buff. Still a big movie buff. Yes.
Oh, very cool.
That came from my mother as well. You know, I'm an AMC guy, a Turner Classic Movie guy, you know, and, you know, a nice, interesting drama. I love a nice, interesting, my favorite, Sherlock Holmes. Get out of here. You know,
mm-hmm.
I'm talking about Basil Rathbone. You know, the
wow.
old
original, right?
Yeah, you know, so I like those mysteries. You know, a good drama, good thriller, good mystery, and I like to laugh, so I watch comedies as well, you know. In fact, I probably have more fun, you know, than I'm portraying right now, but I do. I have a lot of fun. You know, I have fun in my class. You know, I've got so many kids. You better learn how to have fun and get the message across to those kids, you know.
Right.
Yeah, still a big movie buff. You're right.
Wow. Now you're also a musician. You play bass guitar. How long have you been playing it? Are you in a band? Do you gig by yourself? Do you gig with your friends?
I like I mentioned earlier, I think that my mother did some background singing in Los Angeles, you know, during the 60s.
Yeah.
And it starts, I think, from my grandfather, who was a pretty popular gospel singer around West Texas. All right. My mother and her brother and a couple of people from the neighborhood were in a gospel group, you know, in the 40s and 50s. And I have two uncles that are percussionists, you know, so I played some drums, and one of my uncles that was just right under my mother as far as age came to me and said, we're going to put together a family gospel group. And I think I'm probably about 17, 18 years old about the time. He says, can you play bass guitar? And I said, I don't know, I'd try. You know? So he said, well, go out to the car and get that bass that I just bought from the pawn shop and kind of keep it with you and see if you can come up with something, right? So I went and got the bass and went to my room and started working on it. And then when I saw him again, I said, okay, give me an idea of the songs you guys are working on. Let me pick it up. So the basic lines, you know, the downbeat, you know, the drop, the melody, the bridges, the changes,
mm-hmm.
I got it. You know, now I'm not going to say I'm as packed with dexterity as people like Marcus Miller and Stanley Clark and Victor Wooten. I can play with those guys. I can play with them. I can play with anybody, you know. I've played with some big groups before, you know, but I'm kind of a standard. I've got my own riffs. You know, I've got some cool riffs. And some of the guys have told me, man, I'm digging your riff. You know, yeah, I've got it. And I like to play what I call junk, and that's like a jazzy funk.
Like a junk. Jazzy funk.
Yeah.
I love it.
So I kind of write my own lines, you know. I've written some songs, boom, bam, bing. I've written some gospel songs that did well, you know. So that's kind of where that comes from. It's this musical family thing, you know.
Very cool. Have you thought about, like, maybe recording some of your music on CD?
Yes, I have.
Or anything?
Have you?
Okay, cool.
And I think, you know, right now, you know, at my age, I think I would just, I'm looking, you know, to selling some of the things that I've put together. I think I've put together some nice stuff, but, you know, you're a 53-year-old cat trying to break in as a new artist. I don't know. Don't know how that'll work out, but I do have some things that I can hear other artists doing, you know. So, yes, I am looking into that as well.
Awesome.
Wow, that is so cool.
That is cool. Awesome, awesome. All right, I'm going to check the chat board here to see if anyone's, like, got any questions, because I haven't checked the chat board in a while here.
Okay.
No. Oh, one of the chat board people just asked, you know, in what city is he in? And I said, oh, he's just outside of Charlotte, North Carolina.
I'm in Midland. I'm in Midland, North Carolina.
Midland, North Carolina, okay. And then they mentioned, oh, that's the same part of the country as the old pro wrestler Ric Flair.
Oh, exactly right.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
He's out of Charlotte, if I remember correctly.
Is he still around,
Ric Flair? Is he? Oh, awesome. Wow.
Yeah, with his popular trademark, woo!
Woo! And that bleached blonde hair. Wow, he's been around for quite a while. That's
he's been around for the wrestling.
Yeah. Awesome. Now, I had a question getting back to the Noble Method and the Kidokai type of curriculum. Do your classes involve weaponry?
Yeah, you know, yes, I have personally always kind of wrapped around with the screamer sticks myself. But I really hadn't involved it into the curriculum until maybe like the last 3 years. And I have a student, Sifu Rucker, who also teaches in Concord, North Carolina, who has picked up some other things as well as far as the bow staff and some of the swords. And I watched his fundamental movement, and I kind of picked up some vocab as well. But you know me. I don't do what everyone else does. I use my experience as a simple stylist, and I develop my own form. And I will mention that I took two students to competition yesterday in South Carolina, one placed first and one placed third, using my vocab.
Right on. Right on. Kudos to them. Kudos and a public shout out, because it takes a lot of hard work to win in tournaments. So right on for those kids. Kudos. So shout out goes to them, that's for sure.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, we're actually almost running out of time, and we've just got a couple more questions, unless you have another question, Sifu Bob.
No, go ahead, Sifu.
Okay. Now, for any teens or kids out there that may be listening, because we are slowly growing our younger audience as well, what advice would you give to kids that are interested in martial arts and want to get into it or have just started martial arts? What type of advice would you give to those kids to take with them throughout their training?
It's to make sure that you have an open mind, you know, because especially kids will walk into, you know, a dojo facility, and they have these preconceived ideas on what they're going to learn if they have no idea what they're doing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Preconceived ideas. You know, I work with a lot of the younger children who are Power Rangers that nobody knows about, and you know, I've got a couple of ninjas. You know,
oh, really?
they have these preconceived ideas. I need the parents to talk to the kids and tell them, now make sure that you listen and have an open mind to what the instructor is going to teach you. Make sure you give the instructor a chance to get something across to you. I try to make sure that I explain things to them, so when I teach them something that they really get, and I let them know, that's it. So if they have that open mind, and once they get it, and I let them know they got it, then they feel good about what they're doing. But the main thing is just be prepared for what you're not expecting. Because they expect certain things. Be prepared for what you're not expecting, and that would help them out in learning any style. And I do. I think anybody should walk into a dojo and check it out. If you're going to read what an instructor does, if you're going to talk to an instructor on the phone, that's not good enough. Mm. You go and you visit that dojo. You actually set in and you watch. I've had students to set in and watch for 3 or 4 weeks, and then finally, bam, I'm ready to sign up. That's what I want you to do. I want you to know that my character is what you need to learn this system. I want you to know that. So definitely visit the dojo. And don't just walk in and walk out. Visit. Check it out, you know?
Awesome. That is wonderful advice, especially for the parents, because, you know, a lot of times, you know, parents that aren't familiar with martial arts or think that, you know, it's just something to do for the summer, a lot of times, unfortunately, they look for the cheapest instruction possible. And, you know, unfortunately, as we all know, the cheapest instruction isn't necessarily going to be the best instruction for your child. That's not to say that, you know, we want people to go out and spend, you know, $200 a month, but, you know, as Professor McDaniel had just pointed out, visit the dojo, really watch the classes, you know, see how the teacher teaches and
exactly.
Stuff like that, and see what type of rapport that your child can have with the other kids and the teacher, because that is the most important. Yeah, it is. And I've had parents basically walk in, walk out because the children have a preconceived notion. Oh, they're not doing like Pink Ranger stuff. So, you know, I don't want to be here. You know, when do I get to learn how to use the Psy, like the Mutant Ninja Turtle? Well, we don't do that quite. Yeah, you know, and then they walk out. You know, and for parents that go out and want to do, or not, how do I put this? That want to make sure that everything their child wants, they get.
Uh-huh.
You know, when it comes to the martial arts, it's going to be hard to find people that teach, you know, Master Splinter style of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
or Pink
exactly.
Ninja, or Blue Ninja, or whatever, mm-hmm. Power Rangers. I don't even know what the Power Rangers are thing anymore.
And I want to interject. I want to interject on that because you've hit a point that's very important to me. And please know, this is not to knock what anybody is doing, but I want to let you know what I do. And I'm going to give you this is one of my quotes. If your parents go out on a date and you have to get a babysitter to watch you when they're out, then you don't have a black belt.
Mm.
That's just me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now that's just me. So when I have parents that might bring kids to me expecting for them to have 8, 9, and 10-year-old black belts, that's not happening with me.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, I don't want to knock other styles either because, you know, some other styles will have, you know, junior black belts or what have you. And I've had a few 9-year-olds come into my studio and say, well, I'm a black belt in such and such. And then I'm like, what? You're 9 years old. You're 9 years old. You're not even in middle school yet. You know, what? I don't get it. And I agree. You know, I agree, you know, I might get some flack for it, but, you know, for agreeing with that. But I do. I agree that a certain type of maturity, not necessarily chronological age, but a certain type of maturity is needed to carry the responsibility of wearing the black belt around your waist. Yeah.
You're exactly right. You are exactly right. I agree with that. So I will have some sharp young students. I've had sharp young students. I have an impeccable reputation for developing some good students. But, you know, you can be sharp as you want to be at 11, 12 years old, but you're not going to be a black belt.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, anyway, there's a certain responsibility that ties in with that. So, I appreciate you. Agreeing.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And I'm sure Bob agrees, too. Because, the 8-year-old black belts that, you know, that have come through my studio from other places, you know, I'm like, well, then explain to me why you're here now.
Right.
You know, if you're a black belt, why are you here? You know,
right.
And it's usually because of the parents. The parents think, well, they got their black belt, so now, you know, they know it all, therefore it's time to learn something different. And I literally have to pull my hair out and go, excuse me.
Yes.
What? You know, and then when they ask, you know, how long is it going to take my child to get a black belt? Because, you know, he got his a year. And I'm like, well, he's going to be, you know, an adult by the time he gets his black belt. And then they leave. Yeah, thank you very much. And then they leave. Now, I have promoted a few students that were like 16 years old because, they were the same age I was when I was promoted. But they had to prove that responsibility in everything they did. Work, home, life, wherever. And if they could prove that in the dojo and out of the dojo, then they got their black belt because I know that it's just going to stay with them. But I'm sorry, 8-year-old, that's too young.
Exactly. But definitely want to throw that out there. So, I will teach your students well. I know I will. I'll do well with your students, but don't expect diapers and a black belt. They don't go together.
Awesome. Wonderful advice for the kids and wonderful advice for parents looking for their kids, too. So parents, definitely check out the dojo. Don't settle on the first dojo that you get to just because it's close. And, again, we get a lot of that. You know, I just want to join this school because it's 2 minutes from my house. Well,
right.
Yeah, you know, but if your kid doesn't enjoy it, then, you know, it's all for naught. So. Well, oh my goodness, we are almost out of time. Before we end our interview, Professor, can you give our listeners your website URL again, please?
Okay, that's ketokaikempo.com. So that's going to be ketokaikempo, ketokaikempo.com. That's going to be the website.
Now, is that with an N as in Nancy or M as in Mary? Kempo.
Mary.
Okay,
Mary.
Got it. KEMisinMaryPO.com. Awesome.
Exactly.
Awesome. So that's KEDOKAIKEMPO.com, listeners, if you're interested in checking out the website or if you happen to be in the Midland, North Carolina area, passing through and you want to say hello to Professor McDaniel and see his dojo, please look up the website there. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Professor, for joining us today. What a wonderful time we had. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Hey, Sifu, I've got something to say.
Sure.
With all due respect, Professor, when I go into an interview with no expectations because I really didn't know you, we're a little apprehensive, but you gave a wonderful interview today. I really appreciate it. You exceeded my expectation by leaps and bounds. With all due respect, sir, I respect you dearly now.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. That means so much.
He's a Kajakembo guy, Bob. I knew he'd be.
Really I had no idea though that it was going to go so well, and it was the insight, the knowledge that you gave to us on the mentoring program. I hope it really hit home with a lot of people. It hit home with me. And I did send you a Facebook message while I was on the phone with you. Please read it and get back to me when you get a chance, sir.
No problem. You sent him a message, huh, Bob?
Yeah, I sent him a message.
I got it. Awesome. Good. Please read that message, Professor.
Yeah. Oh, did you figure it out, Sifu?
Yes, I did.
Oh, you do suck.
Remember, we're a team, bro.
Awesome. Hey, Sifu, let's do it again sometime.
You bet. You know,
anytime.
We would love to have you on as a guest co-host along with us for a whole show when someone else is the guest.
Very good.
Love to have that, and both of us hope that we can meet you in person.
Very good. I'll let you know where I'm going and when I'm going, and maybe we could hook up somewhere.
That would be wonderful.
Absolutely.
Out of sight. Great. Thank you so much, Professor.
Yes, thank you.
That was Professor Patrick McDaniel of the Keto Kai System. Join us next week. We have no idea who we're going to have on next week. We have no idea yet, but I am hoping to bring on Paul Nolan and Lauren Wickline. They are two extremely skilled whip makers. Now, last week we had whipmaster Adam Winrich on the show, and Paul Nolan and Lauren Wickline had called in and added their expertise to our discussion with Adam and the forum. And I asked them if they wanted to be on an upcoming show, and they agreed. So I'm going to try to get them on the show. And if that's the case, if you're a whip enthusiast, you don't want to miss it, because I hope to ask them questions regarding whip making. So if you've just started learning how to make whips, as I have, I'm a really new whip maker, you're going to want to speak to these people because they're very great whip makers. Awesome. All right. So, Bob, do you have any parting words before we sign off?
Do I have any parting words? Thank you for putting me on the spot. I appreciate that. You're always good for that.
Yeah, I am, especially since we only have 90 seconds left.
No, it was a great show. I really enjoyed Professor McDaniel. And I'm with you. I hope we get the chance to meet him, to sit down and talk with him actually face-to-face. He would be a wonderful guest co-host.
Yes, I think so. And we'll be getting in touch with you about that, Daniel, when we want to bring you on to be a co-host. So it'll be great.
Very good.
Awesome. All right, everyone. Well, have a great night. Have a great rest of the weekend. And we'll see y'all next week. Good night, everybody.
Thanks. Good night.